Glacier National Park is emerging out of winter and into spring. The plants and animals are waking up, and a few trails are open for hiking. Join Glacier National Park expert and Hungry Horse News editor Chris Peterson as we talk about springtime in our gem of a national park. Hi, and welcome to the FBCC Nature Journal, the podcast for everyone who loves nature. We're coming to you from the beautiful campus of Flathead Valley Community College at the foot of the Swan Mountain Range of northwest Montana, my favorite mountain range. I'm John Fraley, longtime instructor in wildlife conservation here at the college, and I also served 40 years with the Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. Our producer is the talented Colin Burkhart, and thanks to Morgan Ray, the library director, for offering the library as our podcast home. Well, today we welcome Chris Peterson to the show. Chris, thanks a lot for coming on.
Hey, good morning, John.
Hey, I just read this week's edition of Hungry Horse News before I came over here. So there were some things in there that we wanted to talk about, as well as the birds and the red fox and so on. So let's get started. As far as the red fox is concerned, you and I were discussing this. It just seems like I have seen, at least anecdotally, so many more red fox in the years, let's say the last 15 years, than I ever saw before. Mm-hmm. And you were talking about that theory about the wolves and the coyotes. Tell us about that.
Sure. So the theory is that the wolves returned to Montana have lowered the coyote population because they're a competitor, and thus then the red fox is able to fill that niche in the ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be fairly accurate. When I was shooting a film along a local river not too long ago, I had wolves, I had red fox, I did not have coyotes.
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
Okay. And we'll be talking about your upcoming presentation of your film here in a minute. So let's talk while we're on the subject. The other thing that was in your newspaper today was the Hungry Horse News, was the Dark Skies Initiative and all that. And you were involved in that. Tell us about that.
Well, I wasn't really involved in the initiative so much, but there was a bright light that had been put up along Lake McDonald. And I made some phone calls and talked to some folks at the Park Service. And it turned out that this light, which was at the boat dock, was actually owned by Flathead Electric. Hmm. And talking to the co-op and talking to the concessionaire, they agreed to take it down, and they did. And the light that was there was pretty darn bright and was sending a, you know, big dome of light out onto the ice.
Right.
And they took it down a few weeks ago, and it is dark now. I mean, the entire foot of the lake now is dark sky.
I'll be darned. Well, that's
it's fantastic. Great. It's just great. I mean, even if, and it's so nice, John, that you can, you know, like if you're in a wheelchair or your mobility challenged, I mean, you can literally get out of your car 10 feet and see some just fantastic night skies over Lake McDonald.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. And you had a picture of the starshine of that view from that spot you're talking about. And this is an initiative that goes for Waterton and Glacier, though, right? It's a dark sky initiative.
Yeah, it's an international dark sky park. And the problem with this light is that it wasn't owned by the Park Service.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't really have jurisdiction over it. It was really nice of Flathead Electric in the boat company to accommodate dark skies. It was really great.
That is really good. And so you're up in Glacier almost every day because I know you're working on documentaries and so on. So let's talk about, as you know, the birds are really coming back up there. How about the varied thrush? Tell us about that one.
Well, the varied thrush are back. Best time to hear the long note of the varied thrush, which is really unique. I'm not even going to try to make that sound. If Denny Olson was here, he could probably do it. But you're going to hear these guys early in the morning, right after, you know, like dawn. The males are at the highest tree, and they get that great long note. Yeah. And then in the evening, same thing. The other night, just before dark, in fact, it was just about dark, they're calling. And you can see them around Apgar and, you know, just basically anywhere in Glacier.
You also talked about the yellow rump warbler. Tell us about that. That's probably one not a lot of people know about.
Yeah, yellow rump warblers are pretty cool. You should start hearing them any day now. They're an April bird. They're one of the first warblers to show up in the park. They're blue, and they have yellow on their wings, and they have, obviously, a yellow rump. So the best way to see those guys is get yourself a decent pair of binoculars. Don't have to spend a ton of money. But, yeah, they'll be back very soon, and so will the ruby-crowned kinglets,
right,
which are another migratory songbird. And they have the ruby-crowned kinglet, when it gets really excited and is trying to get a mate, has this crown on its head that is bright, bright red, and it pops it up.
Oh. I'll be darned.
And they're just a little bird, no bigger, a little bit bigger than maybe my thumb, mm-hmm. you know, and they're super cool.
Well, that's really awesome, all the critters you run into up there. But I guess when you're up there almost every day, tell us about that great blue heron filming you were doing and what happened there.
The great blue heron was on a private ranch that I've been doing a little work on. Yesterday, in fact, it was windy, middle of the afternoon, not really thinking that we're going to see anything. But I have a blind set up along a little slough, and we crawled into it. And without knowing it at the time, there was a heron on the pond, and we watched him eat a vole.
Hmm.
And it's basically a one-step process. He grabs the vole and swallows it whole. What was really cool is that, we're shooting this off. We're doing all this from blinds with big, long telephoto lenses, and you could see the vole just kind of go down its throat, and then it just kind of stuck there.
Oh, my gosh.
And I don't know if people know this, but herons typically don't share their hunting area, but they share their nesting areas. So they'll nest in what's called rookeries.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll have maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 heron nests all in these usually like a grove of big old cottonwoods. But when they hunt, they're typically pretty territorial in their hunting areas.
Sure.
So.
And speaking of nesting, we have the dippers. About time for them to be nesting. And tell us about the unique way that they nest.
Well, American dipper is a really cool bird because it's the only songbird, I think, in North America that actually flies underwater. And that's pretty unique. And then what's also really unique about them is their nest is typically made out of moss and mud and stuck to a boulder, usually above a fast-moving stream.
Sure.
And even sometimes culverts and that kind of thing. Then the female will stay inside the nest, and all there is a little bitty hole. And that's where she goes in and out. And then the male will, they both feed the young, but she's typically in that nest for a long time when she's incubating the eggs. And so another cool thing about dippers is they mate for life, just like geese.
That's incredible. We've done shows on the dipper before. What an amazing animal. You can stand up and watch it, as you said, kind of fly underwater.
Yeah.
It works its way up and along the bottoms, just getting those aquatic insects.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned you haven't been seeing many bears up in Glacier, though.
I personally haven't seen any tracks yet, but they're definitely around.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they're out.
They're definitely out. Yeah, carry your bear spray. You never know. Just because you're not seeing tracks, you're not seeing sign. I don't know how many times, I've gone on a hike, not seeing any bear sign, thinking, oh, I'm not going to see a bear today. And you get around the corner and there's a bear.
So, I've had a number of close encounters when I was working up along McDonald Creek in the 80s when I was counting kokanee salmon.
Right.
For grizzly bears hanging around in McDonald Creek. And all of a sudden, there they are.
All of a sudden, there they are. Right.
So you also mentioned, for those folks going up there and hiking and so on, that the trails are mostly still snowbound. We should remind people that you can't ride bikes on the trail.
Right. There's only one trail in the whole park that I'm aware of that's open to bicycles, and that's the Quarter Circle Bridge.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah, the Quarter Circle Bridge. It's the old Flathead Ranger Station Trail, actually.
Yeah.
And that is open to bicycles. So are the bike paths.
Right.
But any of the trails going off of those bike paths are not open to bicycles. And pets, unfortunately, we see more and more people with pets on trails. And even on a leash, pets are not allowed in Glacier on trails.
So let's talk a little bit about your film trailer you're going to show, depending on when folks are listening to this. It's being shown Friday, April 21st at the Whitefish Lake Lodge for the Science Quencher, and you're going to show a trailer for this film you've been working on for so long and all these wildlife scenes you're getting. Tell us a little bit about that.
I did a little short film on a small protected river in this area that I've been going to for quite a while. It took, I've been filming now for, most of it was done in the course of a year, so we follow the seasons. I tried to do it in the old Walt Disney films, just following the landscape through the seasons. And,
well, I know I'd be up there and I'd see you sneaking around the woods at near Apcar over by the Quarter Circle. What's he doing?
Yeah.
You said, and you're real secretive about it. Well, I'm filming a documentary, but you didn't
really. Well, not really secretive so much as that you have to be quiet. Anytime you're filming animals or landscapes, A, you have to be quiet for sure. Can't make a lot of noise. And then B, you have to be super patient because, you'd spend hours on end just watching a hole in the ice waiting for something to pop out of it. And if you waited long enough, eventually sometimes something would, and sometimes something didn't. But the film itself, we saw all kinds of really cool stuff.
What's the number one thing you remember about filming this?
Oh,
just pick one that really stood out. Well, you talked about the heron.
Yeah, the heron's not in this film, though. Oh. We did have a heron. That heron was really cool. It would come in night. He never fed during the day. He came in, almost it would be dark, and he would hunt by the moon.
That'd be dark.
And that was pretty cool. But he's not actually in the film because it was too dark.
Now, when I've seen you up there, you were with your son, Hunter.
Yeah. Well, Hunter's my, right-hand man. He carries like half the gear.
Okay. He's a big guy.
I think there was some, oh, geez. Boy, I don't know that I have a favorite, because parts of it are pretty sad,
Don't give too much of it away.
Yeah, so some of it, that's the thing. I mean, that's the thing with the documentary. The story, you don't have a script. Yeah. You go out there and you film for a year and a half in basically some of the worst weather I've ever been in, to be perfectly honest with you. And, the story unfolds in front of you, and then you spend another year and a half editing.
Yeah, that's really
But we would spend like, you might spend 2, 3, 4 hours to get 15 seconds of footage.
Right.
And then you'd be so super happy that you got it.
People don't realize the editing process and how involved it is.
Yeah. And I guess one of the cool things is that one day, and this was like in the middle of the day, these two wolves came out of the brush and they crossed the creek. And what was really interesting is that they held their tails up just as high as they could so they wouldn't get them wet.
Oh my gosh.
Did not want to get
me.
Those tails wet. Yes.
You are kidding me.
No, I am not. And you could tell. I mean, they would just.
Well, with that, we're going to leave it.
It was pretty
funny. Incredible.
Yeah.
Chris, thanks a lot for coming on today, and good luck as you finish up this film, and we can't wait to see it.
All right. Well, thank you.
That's all the time we have for this episode of the FECC Nature Journal. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Fraley, and I'll see you next time.